It is an emblem of the spirit of freedom. It is a long smoldering spark of the fire in the hearts of a people, hearts burning and yearning for freedom. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are produced by Noel Hanrahan for Prison Radio.
You've been listening to Free Speech Radio News. Our newscast is supported by Pacifica Radio, community radio affiliate stations, and listener supporters. We podcast online at www.fsrn.org. That's fsrn.org.
And this is WBAI, New York. Time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. For million bombs was the best expect for worse. I hope that's understood. For million bombs!
Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. And boy, the odds of me being here right now are pretty slim, but somehow it worked out. We'll get into that in just a moment. Joining me here tonight, over there on the far side of the studio, is Jim.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Arseny, I
believe. Hello.
There's Mike. Hi. Back from Europe. Welcome.
Thanks.
And over on the other side of the room is not Kevin.
Hello.
Down in Philadelphia, Bernie S.
Welcome back to the land of freedom, Emmanuel.
Well, we only in Canada for a few minutes, but it was nice, and now we're back here.
Oh, sorry about that.
What a story not Kevin and I had, because we actually started this morning from Heathrow in London at a very early hour. We had to go through all the crazy security there.
What an unpleasant way to start a day.
It is an unpleasant way. Well, you know, I got to tell you, I love England. I love the people, but it's a big ripoff. It really is. We were in a hotel right next to the airport, and there was supposed to be a shuttle from the hotel to the airport. And every time I've ever taken a shuttle from a hotel to an airport, it's been a free shuttle. And we found out the last possible minute that it was £4 each to go a kilometer away to the airport. But you couldn't just walk to the airport. You had to take a long, circuitous route.
And, so that's about $8.
And the thing is, I didn't have any pounds because I figured I'd spend them all the night before and not have any extra pounds left over. So I had to negotiate in American dollars with the driver, and I was actually able to do it.
Well, that's
but
nice.
It was nice. And I found I had 10 pounds downstairs when I was trying to pay a cab driver here. So that was kind of interesting in and of itself. But we had a bit of an adventure after that because, we flew through Canada. And the idea was for us to land in Newark at about 5:30 and then take mass transit to get here by just about 7 o'clock. But we found out in Toronto that our flight was delayed an hour, so that meant we wouldn't have gotten here until 6:30. And you just can't make it that fast on mass transit from Newark Airport to Wall Street. So we negotiated our way onto an earlier flight that went to LaGuardia Airport. And then we had to get a cab driver who knew what he was doing to race down here, and we actually got here earlier than we usually do. So it was an adventure, right, now, Kevin?
I'm actually surprised at how friendly the Air Canada people were.
They were very friendly. We just walked up to them and said, "Hey, can we do this?" And they said, "Well, do you have any bags checked?" And no, you don't check bags. This is one reason you don't check bags. That way you can switch flights easily. And we didn't have any bags. Although when we came from Heathrow, we had to check one bag each because Heathrow has this rule of just one bag, and they're very strict about it. They're very strict, and they're very paranoid, too. But they don't make you take your shoes off.
Well, that's an American thing, this whole shoes.
It is an American thing. We had all sorts of weird security practices in Heathrow, but not that.
they do make you take your shoes off, but when we were going through the line, we were herded off to the side around the X-ray.
Two-thirds of the people have to take their shoes off and go through a secondary security thing, and this other guy can stand there and just wave people by, and we go down the express lane for some reason.
One thing I did notice, I flew back from Germany, and some Americans take their shoes off anyway, even though they don't have to, just out of an expectation that that's the requirement.
Yeah.
In Russia, they actually give you plastic socks that you can put over your feet, you know, after you take your shoes off, so you don't dirty up your real socks.
Uh-huh. That's pretty cool, I guess. Now, we noticed a couple of things on the way through security. I believe, not Kevin, you saw an X-ray machine.
Yes, the Rapiscan.
Rapiscan. That's spelled Rapiscan. Did you ever hear of that one, Bernie?
Yes, I've seen it before, although they have different models. I'm wondering if it was the newer, improved backscatter version, which effectively will X-ray your clothing, or if you happen to be walking. Was this a walk-through thing, or was it just of a bag?
It was a bag.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they probably had other ones all over the place as well. Now, Heathrow, of course, is notoriously stringent on security. They're very, very paranoid and... but it didn't take that long, what we had to go through. It really didn't seem to be that bad. We did get interrogated by a machine because we were checking in. And it kept – first you have to insert your passport. Then it said, okay, now tell me the city you're going to or the credit card you used or your flight number. And you tell it that, and then it asks for more information. It keeps asking you for – until you basically give it just about all the information anyway. And I was getting very frustrated with that, but eventually we were able to register without having to actually stand in the line, which was kind of cool. So it was a fun day. It's still going on. And we spent a good amount of time in London playing around with various security things. First of all, cameras are everywhere in London. Everywhere. I have never seen anything like this, even in a science fiction film. You just cannot not be on camera anywhere you go, even inside a building. They're just everywhere. The people are infatuated with these things. They believe that these devices are going to keep them safe. And in actuality, the country is no safer than it was ever before. There's still just as much violence. There's still just as much fear going on. I don't really understand the point of a camera when you're trying to find out who a suicide bomber is. You know, you're going to find out in other ways anyway. Unfortunately, this system has become ingrained in people's heads, and I've read several accounts. I was reading the papers on the way over today. Several accounts where people who were accused of committing crimes, they committed the crimes out in the woods somewhere because they wanted to avoid being captured on camera. They're committing the crime still. They're just going someplace else to do it. They know where the cameras are, so they're adjusting their behavior and simply taking it someplace else. So I guess the only solution is when everything is being monitored, and then... people won't commit any crimes except in their heads, perhaps.
They're working on
place
that.
No place to hide.
Apparently not. Not in England, anyway.
But that's a very good point. Almost every time you hear statistics from law enforcement or government agencies that say that these surveillance cameras have reduced crime everywhere we put them. Well, yeah, people move out of camera range to other areas and commit their crimes there. If they were to take the sum total of crimes in a given city, or crime market, if you want to call it that, I'm sure it hasn't changed that much.
In Newark, New Jersey, they're putting cameras all over the place now. You can read this article in the Star Ledger where the police director, Gary McCarthy, says, quote, "I kind of feel like a kid on Christmas morning," in response to all his new cameras.
Oh, God. See, the danger, it's funny. It is funny. But the danger is that it doesn't go away. These cameras are going to be here forever. Just imagine any movie or TV show you've seen of a street in London in the past, how it looked. It's not going to look like that anymore because there are going to be these peering eyes all over the place, constantly staring at you. We were walking around yesterday, and where was it? In the financial district, there's this building with a giant... opening on the top, a giant circular opening.
It was a walkway through the Mint of London.
And you can just see the sky, you know, this vast circular opening with just the sky visible. But peering over the edge is a little camera staring straight down at you, staring straight up. There is no place you can go where they're not looking at you. And it's just so sad to see this happen to England. I think England has been through so many things, so many bombings and terrorist attacks over the years, but nothing... has threatened its character like this. And I really shudder to think where the future is going to lead. And it's coming here, too, the Ring of Steel. The Ring of Steel is coming to New York. We're looking at them as an example, a shining example of success.
So. And they're not that successful. They keep having more and more bombings.
I know. Isn't that something? Or the thing is, the last attempted bombing they had was not prevented at all by CCTV, by the closed-circuit television cameras. It was prevented by ineptitude, people literally driving flaming cars into airport terminals and not being able to do that properly, leaving cars with all sorts of explosives and running away from them and people finding them without the use of cameras. They were caught because, well, they were trying to blow themselves up and they failed. The cameras didn't do anything, and yet the cameras are being touted as the answer, the solution.
I believe that the cameras are quite useful in that when making suicide martyr videos after the fact, you don't have to have spent anything on a camera of your own. You can get it off the news feeds afterwards for your heroes who are now immolated.
All right. Another bit of technology we were playing with quite a bit was something known as the Oyster card, which is a transit card that we came to know and love in our days in London. Not Kevin, what kind of technology is in use here? Is this RFID? Is this something else?
I believe this is a proxy card.
A proxy card, okay. Mike, you're looking at it very closely. What do you think?
I think they really want you to reuse it.
Yeah, they do. They give you a little wallet. What you do is you can either register your Oyster card, and that means you can maintain it online. You can look at your trip history and add money online, or you can do what we got, do what we did, and get a pay-as-you-go card. Which basically means you shove £5 into a machine and then touch your card to the machine and then you have five more pounds and you can use it. Now, okay, I'm going to read you a little bit of the instructions that I saw. I took this from Wikipedia, and this sort of gives you an idea how kind of crazy the system is. The card can hold up to 3 ticket products at the same time. These tickets may be travel cards valid in specified zones or bus passes. Both travel card and bus passes may be issued for validity of 1 week or longer, up to 1 year. The Oyster card is designed to be multi-modal. Right? Is that how you say that?
Modal.
Modal.
Yeah.
Okay. Multi-modal. All right.
That means it can work on buses and trains and other modes.
The Oyster card is designed to be multi-modal. Okay, and works across London's Tube, DLR, tram, and bus network. Users with period travel cards can also travel on rail services within the travel card zones, roughly corresponding to the Greater London area and all the zones they have validity for on their card. Travel cards can be loaded onto the Oyster card up to a month in advance of their start date. In addition to ticket products, Oyster cards can also be used for stored value travel. Oyster cards can be topped up with stored value of up to £90. The pay-as-you-go, initially known as prepay balance, is automatically debited by the correct fare at the end of each journey by Tube or DLR and each time a bus or tram is boarded. The balance is also debited by the relevant amount if the user travels by Tube or DLR beyond the zonal validity of any travel cards stored on the card. When using pay-as-you-go at stations with barriers, debiting is seamless as users need to use the card to open the barriers. At stations without barriers, users have to remember to touch the card on a validator at the beginning and end of the journey in order to debit the card by the correct amount. Pay-as-you-go users can also use certain sections of National Rail, mainly between stations also served by London Underground. Pay-as-you-go users can also travel within Greater London on most bus routes operated under London Local Service. Pricing is fairly complex and changes from time to time. The most up-to-date fares can be found on Transport for London's Fare Finder website. As of January 1st, a cash bus and tram fare costs £2, while the single Oyster fare is £1, but capped at £3 for any number of trips in a day. When using Oyster on the Underground, a single trip within a zone, within Zone 1, costs £1.50, £4 cash, or £1, £3 cash, within any other single zone. When traveling on the Underground and DLR, in addition to buses and tram, the price of journeys is capped at 50 pence below the price of the relevant one-day travel card. London is the only city in the world that offers this kind of capping.
That's good. That's the equivalent of a one-day Metro card without ordering it in advance.
Did you understand this? Because when I read
this... I got about 3/4 of it.
When I read this, I just said, keep me away from this thing. This is the most complex fare system I've ever heard of. And it goes on for many, many pages about capping and recharging and auto top-up, penalty fares, maximum cash fare. It's unbelievable. But we met up with our friend Russell in London. And I think in about a minute, he was able to explain it in a way that made sense. And basically what happens is you buy the thing, you put £5 onto a card, and I think the total, the amount for a travel card for a day is, I think, around £4.50. So the way it works is that you can't possibly spend more than a daily travel card. You'll get 50 pence less than that, and if you keep using it, it'll top out. It won't go above that amount. If you just use it once, then you'll pay, I think, £1 or something like that. If you use it and you don't tap out of the system properly, you'll get charged £4. So when it works, it's a really good system because you just tap in and tap out, or just tap in on a bus, and it's like you have just the ability to always be on a train or a bus someplace. But when it doesn't work, that's when it gets to be a little bit crazy. And, in fact, we had a little run-in. When we got back to London, was it yesterday? Can I say yesterday?
Two days ago.
Yeah, I don't know. Days are all messed up right now. For some reason, even though we got them at the same time, you had more value on yours than I had on mine, and we could not figure out why.
I apparently had 30 pence more than Emmanuel did, even though we traveled together, mm-hmm. always tapped in and out at every station.
Yeah. Now, we printed out receipts. You can go to a little fare office and ask, give them the card and ask for a printout, and they give you printouts. Now, we discovered a discrepancy. What's the discrepancy you discovered? Maybe some of our British listeners can help us figure out what happened.
Well, the first discrepancy I noticed was that when I traveled from King's Cross to Victoria, I was charged nothing.
Uh-huh.
Well, you were charged £1.50.
Why was I charged £1.50 to do the same thing you did? And then you show up coming in at a different station somehow, right?
And then we leave an hour later, and we're apparently at two different stations, and you are charged less than I am.
Because I had already been charged another amount, and I was about to be topped off or something, right?
And then your cap was applied.
My cap was applied.
And I still end up with 30 pence more than you do.
Yeah. So somehow that happened, even though we were going through the exact same turnstiles at the exact same time. And, I talked to the people at the Underground about this. I asked them, what's causing this? And their response is, we don't know. This is just the way it is. And that's the mentality. The system says this. That's the way it is. We don't know why. That's it. Deal with it. And there's nothing else they can offer. So it was kind of one of the things they said was maybe you forgot to tap out. And it's impossible to forget to tap out inside the metropolitan area because the gates don't open if you don't tap out.
Just to make this clear, mm-hmm. you guys bought it at the same time?
Right.
At the same location?
Same exact location.
Every trip you made was together?
Mm-hmm.
Neither of you made a trip? I've seen them, and I've seen the description.
Yeah, that's right there in black and white. We have a printout.
Nothing different, huh?
No.
Wild.
And, you know, if you guys don't believe me, I can subpoena the CCTV footage that captures not Kevin and myself walking through the various tube stations and the various streets to get to the tube stations. And this is true. You can do this. If you know you're on a camera at a certain time, there's some kind of law in England that says you're allowed to get those records. We were going to make a special program in the middle of a square, but just didn't have enough time.
I see a fascinating discrepancy even before the one that Kevin mentioned. One of these cards had money added to it at Pimlico on March 8th or
no, you're reading the date backwards. They put the
on August 3rd,
mm-hmm.
and both of them had money added at Pimlico on August 4th at about 11:22 in the morning. But one of them had £5 added.
I think what you're saying is that the first entry you're looking at.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think what happened is it scrolled off on not Kevin's, so you're not seeing the £5 added before that because I think it only gives you the last 20 trips or something, the last 10 trips. I can explain that.
One of you had a rejected entry.
That was me. I got rejected
earlier than the other.
Yeah, I got rejected.
Different stations.
Very upsetting. Very embarrassing. Lots of flashing lights and people running around and it says seek assistance and I did.
I don't know.
One thing that's interesting about the Oyster cards is that you can actually end up with a negative balance on your card.
Yeah, and I think you have a negative balance now because we went all the way out to Heathrow, which is Zone 6, and you only had 30 pence on your card, and you exited, and I think it has to let you out.
I believe it has to let you out, but the sign will flash, seek assistance, and then a negative 160 pence.
Yeah, so we beat the system, even though we had to pay £3 a deposit for these cards. It's a good system. It's a fun system. But, man, they make it so damn complicated for no particular reason.
Well, I don't know if this is still true, but the last time I was on the Washington Metro,
mm-hmm.
you could conceivably get a negative balance and have to add money to your card in order to be let out of a station.
Yeah, well, they've had ad fare down there for years, and you can't get stuck in that system. You can get stuck in the Boston system.
You can get stuck.
Mm-hmm.
You can't... You can't get a negative balance. In Boston, you can no longer get stuck.
Oh, really? Okay.
They've fixed that.
They finally fixed that after
they have
how
something,
many?
They have something called the Charlie Card, and finally, after many, many years of confusion, all subway fares in Boston now cost the same amount. It's just that no one can any longer tell you what that amount is.
Now, we also looked around a lot at the cameras for the congestion charge. Everything in London, there's a camera for it. Red lights, cameras, underground cameras, congestion charge cameras. Everything has cameras. It's insane. We were wandering around the various zones, but there's an interesting article that came out in yesterday's, or 2 days ago, Evening Standard. And, Mike, you're going to love this. 25,000 small cars are going to be escaping the congestion charge. They're going to be given a free pass. These cars include the BMW 1 Series, the Citroen C1, C2, C3, and C4, Fiat Grand Punto and new Panda, the Mini Cooper D. Oh, and look at this, the Smart 4-2, exempt. I can take my smart car into the congestion zone in London and not pay a thing. Now,
your wheel will be on the wrong side, though.
What hell of a drive, though.
Yeah, there's all kinds of outcry about this, actually, because...
I'm outraged.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can understand it, because Ken Livingstone, the mayor of London, when he came up with this idea, it was a congestion charge, and now it seems to be an emission fee. If your car has low emission, then you get in for free. And a lot of people are saying this is going to add more congestion because you're going to have all these cars again, not really emitting much pollution, but still congesting. So which is it? Is it emissions or is it congestion that we're trying to prevent here?
I like the other part of his plan where big cars have to pay even more.
But, yeah.
But the free thing, it doesn't make sense.
Right now, cars pay £8, and what he would like to do is increase that to £25. I think that's a great idea, and I think that kind of system would work in New York for the biggest polluters, but the small cars would pay nothing. I think the small cars would pay something, but they should pay less.
It's interesting that it's now seeming to be linked to emissions in London, because yesterday, Congress gave New York a mere million and a fraction to start the congestion pricing studies.
$10 million. I'm sorry, you're right. They get a million and a half now, but if they move forward with the plan, they'll get a total of a third of $1 billion. $10 million for congestion charging, and most of the rest for improved bus service.
But the point is that some newsman pointed out, isn't it silly to go through ordering all the cameras and all that with this not necessarily being approved by the state legislature? And Bloomberg did not then talk about congestion alleviation. He said, well, you tell that to some parent of a kid who has to go to the hospital four times in a month because of asthma, because of all these pollutants. And so I see we already devolving here.
We're going to get the cameras, no matter what, because that's what they really want. And they'll do anything, whether it's selling a green technology or just frightening us to death with the threat of terrorism. Whatever it is, they're going to use it as an excuse to have cameras watching us. And look at London. Look at the way they are now. That is us in 5 years unless we do something about it.
But if we become so dependent on cameras, what happens if the power goes out?
You know, I don't know. London probably has answers for that. I'm sure they have some kind of backup system, but it's a good question. It's a good question. But the power doesn't go out nearly enough to thwart these things. All right. What else? Yes, go ahead, Bernie.
As far as these cameras going out, as you say, I'm wondering how long it'll be before criminals and people that just want to preserve their privacy figure out ways to... cover the lenses with shrouds. You know, you've seen these sort of police guns that shoot nets at people or shrouds at them. I'm wondering if a device could be built that would just shoot a little shroud over the camera lens, or a paintball gun for that matter.
That would probably make you guilty of terrorism.
Yes, you'd have to wear a mask.
And most people, including people in this country, would say, "Yeah, throw the book at them for doing that," because what other purpose could you possibly have? It's privacy is not something to be protected anymore, apparently. Years ago, we were talking about this, about a city that actually was thinking of having a camera watching public streets, and people were outraged. And now, as in your city, Bernie, people are outraged when the cameras don't catch somebody. Why aren't these cameras working? Why aren't there more cameras? Cameras, that's what we need. That's going to fix everything.
That was whipped up. That public sentiment, I think, was whipped up by our district attorney, who said that's why the murderer got away. But that just justifies her her rationale for having more cameras.
And the thing is, we spent some time in England and spent some time in Netherlands and Germany. I don't know, Kevin, what do you think as far as, did you feel safer in London because of all the cameras, or did you feel safer in Amsterdam and Berlin with virtually no cameras?
I don't think I felt a difference in being safe.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a lot less watched when you were in other countries.
It seems to me, just reading the various newspapers in the areas, that there seems to be more violent crime in England. There seems to be a lot of it. And I got to wonder, these cameras aren't doing anything to prevent that, so what exactly are they doing? Enough about the cameras, though. England has all sorts of funny signs around the place. We saw one today, or whatever day it was I woke up last, that basically it was in a parking lot. It said, "Public notice. Empty your car when parking." Yeah, if you leave a car in a public parking lot with stuff in it, it's going to get taken away or blown up or something. They don't want that. They want empty cars.
What if you put it in the trunk, or as they call it, the boot of the car?
I don't know. I'm not sure what the technology is. These are people that go around and can figure out if you're watching television with their vans, okay? So it's quite possible they can detect if you have a suitcase in the trunk as well. Unreal. Okay, and then I saw these other signs. This is right around New Scotland Yard, their police headquarters. Basically, they have these big banners, these kind of Orwellian-style posters that are hanging up on the walls. Terrorism. If you suspect it, report it. Now, here are a couple of handy bits of information that you may not know. Terrorists need information. That's right. Observation and surveillance help terrorists plan attacks. Have you seen anyone taking pictures of security arrangements? Terrorists need communication. Anonymous pay-as-you-go and stolen mobiles are typical. Have you seen someone with large quantities of mobiles being cell phones? Has it made you suspicious? Terrorists need transport. If you work in commercial vehicle hire or sales, has a sale or rental made you suspicious? Terrorists need to travel. Meetings, training, and planning can take place anywhere. Do you know someone who travels but is vague about where they're going? Wow. What a society is being built over there. That's one of the signs. Now, here's another.
Wait, all that on one sign?
Yeah, that's one big poster. And there's a second one that's about the same size. Terrorism, if you suspect it, report it. It's sort of, I guess, the partner to if you see something, say something.
But a lot more wordy.
Yeah, and a lot more prevalent, too. It really is. Terrorists use protective equipment. Handling chemicals is dangerous. Maybe you've seen goggles or masks dumped somewhere? Mm-hmm. All right. You better report if you see a bunch of goggles lying in the street, that's for sure. Terrorists use multiple identities. Do you know someone with documents and different names for no obvious reason? Stop looking at me. It's not fair. Terrorists need storage. Lock, and then we don't need hard drives. Maybe we do. Lockups, what is a lockup?
I would guess it's like a self-storage thing.
All right. Lockups, garages, and sheds can all be used by terrorists to store equipment. They can be used by anybody else in the world to store equipment, too. Are you suspicious of anyone renting commercial property? Terrorists use chemicals. Do you know someone buying large or unusual amounts of chemicals for no obvious reason? And finally, terrorists need funding. Check and credit card fraud are ways terrorists generate cash. Have you seen any suspicious transactions? So basically, any kind of crime that you might come across, whether it's credit card fraud or somebody dumping goggles where they're supposed to dump them, it's got to be linked to terrorism somehow, and people are suspicious and must report this. And you're supposed to call 0800-789-321. That's their toll-free number. We can't call it from here, I don't think. That only works inside the inside the United Kingdom, the 0800 numbers. But 789-321, confidential anti-terrorist hotline. And they had another poster that just had a bunch of shadows that was supposed to represent people who have called that and whose identities were protected. So you're totally safe calling them to report your neighbor, and you're encouraged to do so as well.
Can we talk a bit about suspicious transactions on credit cards?
Yeah, please. That's another thing. This is more of an American thing, but a bunch of people had trouble with that.
I had a little bit of trouble, and a friend of ours had a lot of trouble. When you travel and you're making ATM withdrawals or purchases or what have you in foreign countries, Your bank will very often find this to be suspicious and shut down your card until you call them to confirm that it was indeed you who went to these countries and did this.
How dare you travel without getting permission from your credit card company first?
So I apparently got a telephone call, but I was out of the country, so I didn't receive it. And then they sent me an email, and when I got home, I found I also had a letter all about this one transaction where I withdrew, not a huge, but larger than normal amount of money from an ATM in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really know what, they could clearly see I've been traveling for all this time. And then all of a sudden, I'm in Germany and I withdrew money because I had to pay for the camp.
The chaos camp that we had all just been at.
And they were, they really didn't like this.
We were with a friend of ours in a small German city that was going through utter hell.
Eberswalde.
Yeah.
That's
the name of it. That's not the kind of town you want to be in when something bad happens. It's a lovely town, but just it sounds evil when you say that again.
Eberswalde.
Yeah.
I'm probably saying it wrong, but it's close enough.
Imagine saying that you're stranded there and can't get out. Can't get mail from them now. The thing is, he found out that he couldn't take money out of his ATM card.
And he did not get an email. He just went to the ATM, and it wouldn't give him any money.
Wouldn't give him any money. And when he called them at his expense, actually at your expense, he borrowed your phone, they wanted to know that it was him. They didn't believe that it was him calling. They thought that somebody stole his card, and they had the audacity to call them to try and get the block lifted. And the questions they were asking him were utterly insane. They wanted to know when he opened the account, at what branch, the zip code, the address, all this information that even if you were sitting at home, you'd have difficulty obtaining it. They would not believe his name. They would not believe his address, his account number, social security number, all that information. I think they were just really being nasty. But it goes to show the kind of hell that a credit card company or a bank can inflict upon you when you're traveling.
You missed the worst piece of information they asked him for that no one could possibly know, and which was they wanted to know the exact amount in U.S. dollars of his recent transactions, which he could have told them the amount in euros of his transactions, but the amount in U.S. dollars requires knowing their exact exchange rate, which changes daily, of course, and there's no way any human could possibly know this information, and yet they were demanding it of him.
Unbelievable. Speaking of credit cards, this is something that I noticed many times on this trip, and it was really frustrating and annoying. You'd be in an establishment that takes MasterCard or Visa or something like that, and you have a MasterCard or a Visa, and you offer to pay with your MasterCard or Visa, but then they say, no, we don't take those kind of cards. We only take the cards with the chips in them that all Europeans have and no Americans have. So basically, it's become almost useless having a credit card overseas because we don't use the same technology. They use this, I think it's a better technology. They bring the machine out to you and insert your card, you enter a PIN, it's got a little chip on it, and no signature or anything like that, because signatures can obviously be forged and nobody looks at them anyway. Now, the problem is that the Magstripe cards generally don't work with these kinds of machines, and so they just don't take them. Now, what I want to know is, as an American citizen, how do I get one of these things so that when I travel, I can actually use a credit card? Does anybody know of a way to do this?
I don't think you can. I mean, you'd have to open up a foreign bank account somehow, as far as I know.
Well, a credit card company isn't a bank account. It's a line of credit. So
yeah, but you don't have any credit history in, say, Germany.
Well, the thing is, if I make a transaction, I do. The thing is, these are the same banks. The same banks are offering it to people over there because they live over there, but not people over here.
I don't know. Call them and ask.
I intend to, but I'd like to know if any of our listeners know anything about this. Jim?
You may have to have an account, a credit card account, with the European subsidiary of the American bank, which would enable you to get this sort of card.
I'm just annoyed that we're being left behind yet again on something that the rest of the world seems to be embracing.
I do remember chip and PIN cards coming out a few years ago here, but they've just about all disappeared.
Why is that? Why do things, like the metric system, disappeared? All these things that are good ideas just disappear when they're introduced over here. I'll never figure it out. Okay, the CCC camp, we did a show live from there last week, and that was a lot of fun. However, that was only the first day of the camp. We had another 4 days after that and all sorts of experiences, all sorts of fun things. In fact, we've brought back some interesting little toys as well. Did we lose Bernie? You'll have to try and reach him again, I suppose. He was on a landline. That's supposed to be more reliable. usually is on a cell phone. So, not Kevin, some of your impressions as to the highlights of the CCC camp, the German hacker camp that lasted longer than any other hacker event in history, 5 days.
I think my highlight of the camp was the way that they structured it, being that they set up villages and embassies, and villages being a small group of tents that focus on one topic, since like lockpicking,
mm-hmm.
and embassies being a larger tent that represents a country.
Yeah. And we spent some time at the Italian embassy, and I got to tell you, those guys are great. We had so much fun just hanging out with them and talking to them about the various philosophies and politics and things like that. See, hacking in different countries is completely different. Everywhere you go, the Italians are completely different from the Germans, different from the British, different from the Americans. And going to a place like that, you just wind up coming away with so many different ways of looking at the same thing.
You forgot the Austrians.
The Austrians, too.
They have potato guns in Austria.
They have potato guns? What were they firing through that with that potato gun?
Potatoes, mostly.
No, but at what?
At walls. SCO CDs. They performed a hacksorcism, as they called it, of SCO Linux CDs by firing potatoes, and they burned a CD, and this was put together by some folks from the group called Monochrome, and it was kind of fun.
Yeah, we're going to be doing some things with them in the future, too, because they're a cool group of people down there in Vienna. But imagine that, being out in the middle of the night in this huge camp field slash forest slash Air Force Museum in East Germany, and people are just doing all sorts of spectacular things, like firing potato guns and lighting fireworks and having all sorts of parties everywhere.
The best thing was that no village or embassy wouldn't accept you. There was no language barrier
mm-hmm.
or anything. If I wanted to learn about VoIP phones, I would go find that village,
mm-hmm.
and they would just sit me down and they'd explain everything I need to know.
Absolutely.
Or if I wanted to learn about something else, I would go find it. And they said at the end of the camp there were over 60 villages.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible. That's absolutely incredible. This was, I think, the best of the hacker camping events that have taken place in Europe. And I'm just disappointed more Americans didn't show up, because this changes you. This changes.
There were, to be fair, more Americans than I think I've ever seen at one of these.
There
before.
Were, but the I think the problem was Muslims tend to stick together, mm-hmm. and I think what you need to do in a situation like this is just mix in as much as possible, hang out with people from all parts of the world, and learn how they think, learn what they do differently. And, yeah, it's great to see people there. It's great to see Americans over there and people from all over the world. I want to see more. I want to see more people over there doing more interactive things. Okay, we brought back last week. You might recall that I used a brain machine on me live on the air, and we actually have one of these devices in the studio. Kevin, maybe you could explain just what this is. And, Arsene, I know you know something about it, too.
Well, I think Mitch did a better job of explaining it last week. But
Mitch Altman.
But basically, it's a pair of glasses with two LEDs that will sync up sound and light to your brain frequencies and send you into a meditative state.
Sounds dangerous, but it's not.
It's not.
All right.
Unless you are epileptic.
All right, yeah. I guess that's important to point out. If you're epileptic, don't do this. But it's basically you put this on your head, and it strobes, and it plays a frequency. And you really going? You've done this. Actually, the three of you have done this. I did it on the radio. I was kind of distracted, so I can't really say I did it properly. But can you compare experiences, what it was like doing this?
Well, I only did it for a short time. I think I missed the whole program. But you definitely get all these crazy hallucinations and all this stuff.
Uh-huh. Good hallucinations or
bad
hallucinations?
Not bad.
Uh-huh.
Changing your thought or what you're thinking about really affects what you see. If you're thinking about something happy, you know, it completely changes the color patterns that you see. But if you're thinking about something serious, it gets, you know, darker.
Really? Interesting. Arsene, how about you?
Well, I don't know. I've done that a couple of times. Actually, I had to build like six of these in one day, so I'm a little bit tired of them. But, yeah, no. So the one time I did it, like in complete silence, I think was the best trip. And, you just see all sorts of geometric patterns. And what's weird is the colors, because it's just a red blinking LED, but, you would see blues and other weird colors. Sometimes it's just black and white.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've seen colors I've never seen before.
You're kidding. Colors
no.
You've never seen before.
Never seen before.
All right. Well, okay, what we're going to do now is we have the device. It looks like just a pair of goggles with all sorts of wiring coming out. Do you want to describe what it is, Arsene?
Well, it's just like a cheap pair of paper shielding goggles, you know, something you would wear if you're crafting.
If you see a large pile of those somewhere, though, you should definitely report it.
Oh, my house.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so, and then Mitch modified a kit that someone made. So it's just a little bit different. So that's in the battery pack, and they're both attached to the goggles, and then you plug a pair of headphones in. But we never actually played what the sound is that, mm-hmm. you know, they emit. And it's kind of a disturbing sound, but I can play it.
Yeah, let me just caution people. If we weren't able to play the sound last week, obviously, because I was in Germany wearing this and not over the phone. But what we're going to do now is play the headphones into your microphone. Now, will this hypnotize our audience?
I guess if they're wearing headphones, we're only going to play it for a very short time.
I doubt it. I think it's too distorted.
Could we get in trouble for hypnotizing the audience? Because I'm all for getting in trouble for new and different things, but I'd just like to know first. All right, so if you don't like to be hypnotized, maybe you shouldn't listen now. How long are we going to play this for?
Just like a few seconds. And right. If your radio is up really loud, turn it down.
What kind of frequency is it? Low frequency? High frequency?
It's pretty high.
Okay.
Somewhere 400, I don't know.
Let's play this for about 30 seconds. Let me make sure I get the right microphone. I'll turn down the other ones. And do you want to give me a signal when you're about to go?
This power switch is a little hard. Hold on.
Okay, here we go. Okay, I think that that pretty much gives the point there.
Now, that was only one of four frequencies that this cycles through.
Oh, can you make them cycle to other ones, or is it going to do that now?
Well, it's a 10-minute sequence.
Okay, we're not going to do this for 10 minutes, I'll tell you that.
But after it switches to the second frequency after a minute.
Uh-huh. Why don't you just leave it on a microphone?
Oh, yeah.
How about Redbird's microphone there, where he's not sitting at? And that'll be him for this week. And we'll just
yeah,
leave
I mean,
it there.
It actually started off with something quite low, but I don't know. When you're wearing this, these sounds are so...
Okay. We're just going to have that in the background.
Well,
hopefully it won't get too annoying.
We attended a talk by Mitch in which he's explaining how it works, and apparently the sound in each ear is slightly different, one from the other.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not sure if we'll get the full effect the way we've got just sort of both headphones on one microphone. We'd have to somehow wire it in stereo.
Okay, well, this is a start. No other show in the city is doing this level of hypnosis, so it's a start. We'll get better at it, and soon we'll have all sorts of people doing our beck and call things.
From Mitch's talk, I learned that one of the headphones keeps a constant frequency while the other one fluctuates to give a different... wave.
Okay.
So it makes a beat.
Right? Yeah, but somehow the beat is all in your head because you're not hearing the beats. It's a little bit crazy.
Plus you're seeing this, even with your eyes closed.
Yeah, I can see it right now with my eyes open.
Yeah, we should also point out there's a pair of goggles here with a rapidly flashing red light. And it looks really weird when someone's wearing them.
So, and Mitch is probably going to be here next week, so... he can tell us all about it.
We can really do a mass hypnosis of everybody.
two little lights, one on each lens, or one could say, of the goggles in front of each eye is what you have here, and they're red. It sort of reminds me a little bit of the Cylons from the original Battlestar Galactica, except it doesn't go back and forth. It just flashes.
They were evil, though. They were bad.
I'm not saying anything about this. I'm just commenting on the coloring.
Bernie, are you getting hypnotized down there in Philadelphia?
I don't have the visual stimuli that needs to go along with this.
But can you hear this frequency over the phone?
No, it does not. Well, it may not be a frequency response thing, but it's probably an issue with the vocoder in all digital cell phones, including my Sprint PCS phone.
I thought you were on a landline. Aren't you on a landline?
I was, but then I had to go, so sorry about that.
Oh. okay.
Yeah, had I been on a landline, I might well be able to hear this, because it's you know, within the audio passband. But if it's anything other than human phoneme, it's not going to make it past a vocoder in a cell phone.
One thing I'd like to point out is this machine is not just for hallucinating. It actually allows you to go into a meditative state.
And I'd actually like for Arseny to try this out. But it hasn't changed yet, though. The frequency hasn't changed.
Yeah, but actually the light frequency has changed.
All right, but the tone sounds the same.
Well, the tone is pretty much always about 400 hertz.
Okay, so that's not going to change.
It's just that the other tone varies between Arseny, 411 and 415 or something.
Arseny has put up on the glasses. Now, shouldn't you be wearing the headphones too, though?
Should I do that?
Yeah, I think you should. And then you'll be wearing two pairs of headphones, obviously, but that's just part of the...
You don't have to wear both of them.
You don't have to wear...
You can have the exact same effect with just light or just sound, but it won't be as potent.
Okay, we want it to be potent. We want it to be potent. This is for the benefit of listeners. Now, Arseny, I see you. Your eyes are flashing red right now, and the hotline is ringing, which means that we're in a lot of trouble. Can you hear me?
I can hear you a little.
You can hear me a little.
Because, you know, I have this loud sound in my ear. But, yeah, I'm seeing a lot of crazy stuff.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Seeing,
you're in a safe place.
Don't feel
any fear until we tell you
to. It's always different. Like, I'm seeing just plasma colors, you know, and crazy distortions. And looks like a Windows 3.11 screensaver.
What do you think of that?
That's what it looks like.
Wow, this is a bad trip then. Now, okay, so you...
Can we bring him out of it?
Well, no, you can pretty much dictate where you go. So think of something really, really happy now and tell us what the images look like.
I don't buy into Kevin's ideas about that, but, you know...
Oh, that's negativity. That's going to lead you down a bad path.
Well, I'm seeing a lot more straight lines now.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Lines. Now, try this. This is what I did last week, and it was kind of cool. Close your eyes really, really tightly, and the images go to black and white. Does that happen to you?
I'm still seeing red, but actually the frequency just changed.
Oh. Yeah, you're pulsing slower now.
Well, I'm seeing, like, trees. That's cool.
You're seeing trees?
Well, they went away now.
Wow. So what now? Concrete?
Tie-dye.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, well, you're welcome to sit there with your eyes flashing for as long as you want
while we continue
with the show and maybe take some phone calls, too. Anything else that we want to remember from the CCC camp, which was an absolutely incredible event that people will talk about for generations to come? Nothing else? No other memories? The fire spinning and the drum room, a room filled with people just banging on drums. I don't know how this got started, but all of a sudden I found myself in this room. You could not hear a thing because everybody was banging on drums, and it was the loudest thing I think I've ever experienced. And actually, I took part in it too, and it was so cool, just banging away on things. I don't know what the appeal is, but it really is appealing.
I would just suggest that people who weren't able to make it to the event just go online and you can search easily CCC Camp for photos and all this stuff, and you'll really get a feel for what some of it was.
Now, there was a BSD tent, BSD being an operating system, and there was a tent for the BSD people.
The Open BSD.
Open BSD.
Embassy.
Yeah, you got to get this just right, because if you say free BSD or net BSD, it's totally different. It's like... Protestants and Catholics. It's,
or like Coke and Pepsi.
Yeah. But for some reason, the OpenBSD Embassy was playing what kind of music again?
Polka music.
Polka music. I didn't want to say that unless it was absolutely confirmed. Now, why in God's name would the OpenBSD people, or should I even pursue this, what's the connection between polka music and OpenBSD?
Nobody knows? Really like it.
Okay, they really like it. That's good enough. That's fine. That's all that's needed.
Polka is jaunty. It's the national music of Poland.
Yeah, but
OpenBSD,
I've never described OpenBSD as jaunty.
Polka, if polka didn't have so much accordions, you'd love it. Trust me.
I didn't say I didn't love it.
Yeah, if you have a lot of respect for OpenBSD as an operating system, you could come to one of these camps and go to their tent, and you might lose some of that respect. But it's fun anyway.
Okay, well, you said that, Mike. I did not. Now
you're going to get letters?
Yeah, you're going to get letters.
Right.
Address those to Mike, not to us. Now, also, there was, Kevin, I believe you had information about something the Dutch people were doing with, what was it, light-emitting algae or something?
Light-emitting algae. The Dutch group NOP, which I do not know what it stands for, built a small pool in front of their tent and apparently grew algae using sound and light that emits light.
But it was a hoax.
You ruined it.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, Mike, the story develop here. Go ahead. Continue.
Well, there's not much to continue now.
Oh, okay. Well, yes, it was a hoax. What was it? It was actually glitter just thrown into
the
water?
It was just glitter thrown into the water, but apparently the story made Wired.com and a ton of other sites, and it had all of us for 5 days.
It did. It really did.
It was very convincing.
It was convincing, I'll say that. And the other thing, the final thing I want to mention, we're still wearing the armbands from these little wristbands, rather, from the camp. And the big joke, I guess, on everybody who attended is that you can't get them off. They're stuck there for life. I was worried going through the airport that they'd if there's a piece of metal on them, they'd make it go off, but they didn't.
No, they didn't seem concerned.
They didn't seem concerned at all.
I mean, they made me hold my hands out and wanted me.
I didn't get that.
I think it was because I forgot to take off my belt more than the thing around my wrist.
They didn't even notice my belt. Huh. That's interesting, too. It's funny. I totally forgot Arsene's sitting here with the flashing eyes, and he looks very content. Arsene, are you still in this realm?
Yeah, I'm actually seeing a lot of eyeballs, and I've experienced that before.
Your eyes are closed, though.
I'm seeing, like, you know, on a dollar, they have that all-seeing eye.
Mm-hmm.
I have like a million of those. Oh. I'm looking at them right now.
That's kind of creepy. Let's give out the phone number 212-209-2900. If there's anybody out there who wants to ask questions or make comments in the few minutes we have left. What happens if you open your eyes during this? Are you supposed to do that?
I don't want to do it.
Not much. You just kind of see a flashing red light.
Uh huh. Okay. Well, that's.
Did we want to talk about this story from China?
Yeah, it's kind of scary, isn't it? It's so scary that I don't know if we're going to have enough time to really get into the scariness of it. But go ahead, Mike. But
this is a story. It was originally in the Times. Made it to CNET.com. I read it in the Herald Tribune about the city of Shenzhen in southern China, just across the way from Hong Kong. And they're putting in this city 20,000 police surveillance cameras. Every resident of the city is going to get a residency card with a powerful computer chip, which will include not just the citizen's name and address, but also their work history, educational background, religion, ethnicity, police record, medical insurance status, and landlord's phone number. Even personal reproductive history will be included for enforcement of China's one-child policy. And according to the paper, plans are being studied to add credit histories, subway travel payments, and small purchases charged to the card.
And this is China. They have an awful lot of people. If they're doing this, you can bet it's going to be done all over the place as well. And U.S. companies are involved in this.
Yeah.
Companies are helping them design these systems.
There's a company called China Public Security, which is incorporated in Florida, and they get a lot of their money from Plano, Texas.
Wow. Everything comes from Plano, it seems. That is scary. I'd like to devote more time to this story in the future because it's certainly going to be something that we're going to be seeing more of. Bernie, did you hear about this yourself?
I have, and I think it's rather foreboding. I'm wondering if all that information is actually stored on the card itself or whether a unique identifier is on the card and then that's linked to a database once that number is entered into a reader.
According to the article, it's on the chip itself, but who knows?
Hmm.
All right, let's see if we can take some phone calls in the few minutes we have left. Arsene, are you okay? You look a little...
Yeah, I'm actually wearing two pairs of headphones now, so I can still hear you know, what's going on.
Okay, our voices aren't distracting you from your pleasant trip down hypnosis lane, are they?
I don't know.
Okay, if they just yank those headphones off then, if they do.
No, I like it.
All right, I'd like to ask our listeners who call in, 212-209-2900, speak in subdued tones, because we do have Arsene who's being hypnotized right now with the brain machine. that Mitch Altman has designed and we're playing with nonstop. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Oh, dear. Oh, that's a nasty tone right there. Try this one. Good evening. This button doesn't go down. Good evening. You're on the air. Speak up. Okay, you know, you got to talk, too. This phone is, like, on something, and it's really making it hard to press the buttons. Can we, yeah, all right. Let's try this one over here. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. This is not working out. Which one? That one? That's not... Okay, this one. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Speak up, please.
Hi.
Hi. What's on your mind?
I have... You know, I have one of those American Express blue cards with the ones that you see right through it?
Yeah, I have one of those.
You can see there's a chip on it.
I don't know if it's the same kind of chip.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we have... Chase has something called Blink, which looks like a chip on their... on their credit cards, and it works at 7-Elevens.
Right. Oh, so I guess all right. How would you know if it's the same one?
Well, because it's a great big chip, and it's it sort of dominates the whole card.
Oh, okay.
Is it like a smart chip?
Yeah, it's a smart chip.
Yeah.
It's basically what the rest of the world uses.
Blink is actually an RFID card.
Okay, fine, but that technology is not the same, and it is not accepted overseas, and hardly anybody here uses it, too. In fact, when you go to 7-Eleven, they get very confused when you try to use it. Okay, let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi, guys. It's Bicycle Mark in Amsterdam.
Oh, hey. How you doing?
I'm okay.
We hung out with you quite a bit at the Chaos Camp.
Yeah, we got to hang around. We did the embassy tour.
That's right, the embassy tour, and met the Italians and all sorts of fun things like that. And you gave a pretty good talk yourself.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I wanted to let you know some things, like the polka. That's a Finnish polka, to be more specific.
Oh.
And apparently it got popular at the last event or last camp. It was big with the Austrians.
Finnish polka. Okay, so I guess that's different from Polish polka then.
Yeah, because they do covers. They were doing Operation Ivy and Rancid punk covers in polka.
Awesome. Wow, that's just one of the many things that I guess you learn at an event like this. Any other final comments on the whole Chaos Camp experience?
Well, I'll tell you what was nice. I spent the last few days in Berlin, and I kept running into people from the camp who I didn't even always remember very well, who would come up to me and go, "Hey, I was your neighbor at camp." So everywhere I walked in Berlin, I was running into people from the camp who were excited to see me again.
Yeah, that was cool. Berlin was sort of taken over by hackers for a few days. We kept seeing them all over the place ourselves. And, yeah, it was a great event. You had these neighbors in the forest or in the field, wherever you decided to camp out, and they became your family. It's incredible. I don't know if other people did this. I don't think very many Americans did, but I had no trouble at all just leaving my laptop in my tent if I had to go out and do something. I never expected anything bad to happen. I don't think there are many instances of anything bad happening.
I guess one laptop was stolen.
One laptop out of, what, 3,000 people got stolen.
Yeah.
And,
oh, really? I didn't hear that. Wow.
Yeah, and that's bad. That's bad, but that's nothing. I mean, you couldn't leave it anywhere in the States probably without something being feared happening to it. Anyway, so that's the Chaos Camp. Mark, good hearing from you.
Yeah, likewise. I'm sure I'll speak to you soon.
All right, and that's going to pretty much do it for us here on this particular edition of Off the Hook. If you want to write to us, our address, oth@2600.com. We'll be happy to read letters and thoughts and comments on the air. And we'll be back next week, hopefully more awake. Where have we been up now? 36 hours? 40 hours?
I don't know. Time zones, a million hours.
We woke up at 7 in the morning, but that was in England. And okay, we're going to sort it out now. Stay tuned for the Personal Computer Show. Emmanuel Steen for Off the Hook. Have a good night.
Kraftwerk. Kraftwerk, great German band from Germany, 1978, or was it 79? That is the question. Yes, that's right, it's WBAI. You knew where you were, because you are an informed listener. You like to listen to what people have to say. Both sides of the aisle, just listening. You have two ears and one mouth. Okay.